I'd like to turn your attention this morning to the book of 2 Kings, and we'll look at chapter 5. 2 Kings, chapter 5. We're going to read this entire chapter up front, and then we'll go back and we'll make some comments on this chapter. But this is the story of Naaman the Syrian, and he was also a leper, and this is the story of his cleansing. So here we find in 2 Kings, chapter 5. Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and honorable, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid, and she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, "Would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy." And one went in and told his lord, saying, "Thus and thus said the maid that is of the land of Israel." And the king of Syria said, go, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel." And he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 pieces of gold and 10 changes of raiment. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, "Now when this letter is come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman my servant to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy." And it came to pass, when the king of Israel had read the letter, that he rent his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me." And it was so, when Elisha, the man of God, had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, "Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and with his chariot, and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent a messenger unto him, saying, "Go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean." But Naaman was wroth and went away and said, "Behold, I thought he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper. Are not Abana and Pharpah, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in a rage. And his servants came near and spake unto him and said, "My father, if the prophet had bid thee do some great thing, wouldest thou not have done it? How much rather then when he saith to thee, wash and be clean?" Then went he down and dipped himself 7 times in Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh came again like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. And he returned to the man of God, he and all his company, and came and stood before him, and he said, "Behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. Now therefore I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant." But he said, "As the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none." And he urged him to take it, but he refused. Naaman said, "Shall there not then, I pray thee, be given to thy servant 2 mules burden of earth? For thy servant will henceforth offer neither burnt offering nor sacrifice unto other gods, but unto the Lord. And this thing the Lord pardon thy servant, that when my master goeth into the house of Ammon to worship there, and he leaneth on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Ammon, when I bow down myself in the house of Ammon, the Lord pardon thy servant in this thing." And he said unto him, "Go in peace." So he departed from him a little way. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, "Behold, my master hath spared Naaman, this Syrian, in not receiving at his hands that which he brought. But as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat of him." So Gehazi followed after Naaman, and when Naaman saw him running after him, he lighted down from the chariot to meet him and said, "Is all well?" And he said, all is well. My master hath sent me, saying, behold, even now there be come to me from Mount Ephraim two young men of the sons of the prophets. Give them, I pray thee, a talent of silver and two changes of garments. And Naaman said, be content, take two talents. And he urged him and bound two talents of silver and two bags with two changes of garments and laid them upon two of his servants, and they bare them before him. And when he came to the tower, he took them from their hand and bestowed them in the house, and he let the men go, and they departed. But he went in and stood before his master, and Elisha said unto him, whence comest thou, Gehazi? And he said, thy servant went no whither. And he said unto him, went not mine heart with thee, when the man turned again from his chariot to meet thee? Is it a time to receive money, and to receive garments, and olive yards, and vineyards, and sheep, and oxen, and men servants, and maid servants? The leprosy therefore of Naaman shall cleave unto thee, and unto thy seed forever. And he went out from his presence a leper as white as snow. And so this is kind of a sad story in a way. We find that we begin with a leper, and the leper is cleansed, but then we find that we also end with a leper. It's a very sad story in many accounts. But the lesson here of Naaman, I want you to recognize this morning, is not anything in regards to eternal salvation, but it's rather a lesson of obedience towards God and the temporal blessings that come from that. If you were to go home and you studied upon this account, you would no doubt find many commentators that want to make this out to be a lesson of eternal salvation. But I'm telling you today that that's not the lesson. The lesson is something in regards to obedience towards God and that bringing about temporal blessings here. And so Naaman, we're told, Syrian. He was a great man of the host of the king of Syria. He was a man of valor and so forth. It's listing all these things that are good about Naaman. And then it says, but he was a leper. That makes me think that we all have a but in our lives, if you will. You can look at the resume of Nathan Meeks and you're probably not going to be very impressed. But all the good things you might be able to put over here, I guarantee you there's some big buts over here. And that's the way with many people. That's the way with all people, I dare say, today. That all of our righteousness that we can put together in one column over here is as nothing but filthy rags because we have this big but over here. And so it is with Naaman. He was all of these wonderful things, but he was a leper. And leprosy is, as we've mentioned in the past, is an incurable disease. It's something that was just a death sentence. If you became a leper, if you contracted that disease, you might as well just start writing out your will because that's the end of your life as you know it. There was no cure for this disease. And leprosy is used as a picture of sin in the Bible, and we find many reasons why it's a fitting picture. For one, leprosy is something that goes deeper than the skin. Many people, they'll sin in their lives and they'll think that there's really no consequences to that sin. That it's just kind of a skin deep thing, if you will. Just something on the level. But sin, like leprosy, is something that actually goes deeper than the skin. Not only that, but leprosy is something we find that also spreads, doesn't it? It'd start out on one part of the body and before you know it, your whole body was covered. Well, sin, dear friends, spreads. What's David say in the first Psalm? He says that blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of the sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. I've pointed out there how that is a progressive attitude, how that is a progression of sin in the life of a child of God. That they've started out in one position, and that is a position of walking, and then they've actually decided to then stand and take in the scenery, and before you know it, they've decided to sit right down in the seat of the scornful and make that their house. Paul says that a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump, and evil communications can corrupt good manners. That tells me again that sin has a way of spreading in the life of a child of God. And so is leprosy, and leprosy a fitting picture of such. Leprosy is something that would isolate people. They had to be away from society. They were not allowed to live normal lives with the rest of society for fear that it would spread to them. So leprosy was something that isolates. Is sin not something that isolates us? Is sin not something that isolates us from God? Is it not something that puts between Him and us a great barrier? Is it not something that can isolate us from the life of other children of God or even from our home in the church? Certainly it is. And so sin and leprosy has that in common. But as I've alluded to, leprosy has no cure. Sin has no cure except one, and that is God. Only God could cure leprosy. Only God can cure sin. And thanks be to God that He did through the blood of His Son, Jesus Christ. And so, Naaman, this Syrian, he had this disease of leprosy. And as I started out by saying, his obedience here and going to the River Jordan, his obedience didn't save him eternally, but gave him temporal blessings here. There's nowhere in this story where you'll read anything about heaven. There's nowhere in here where you'll see any allusion to heaven. But yet many people want to put that typification. They want to put that greater lesson on this. You say, Brother Nathan, you just don't understand. There's something bigger here than just the fact that he was cured of his leprosy. There's something bigger here that he had a belief, that he had a faith, that he had obedience. And it was through his belief and faith and obedience then that he became a child of God. They'll say that when he came out, and his skin was just as new, just as a newborn babe, if you will. They'll say that's the Old Testament version of being born again, just as a child is born. They'll say, well, that's just like being born again because of his faith and his belief and his obedience. Dear friends, let me tell you today, based upon the authority of Scriptures, that your belief is not enough to gain heaven for you. In fact, if your belief was enough to gain heaven for you, then I read that every devil and every demon would be in heaven. Because don't we read that the devils even believe and tremble? Certainly they would be an heir of glory world. But your belief is not enough. Neither is your faith. What did the Apostle Paul say? He said that some had their faith overthrown. Dear friends, the comforting message of the Apostle Paul was not then that they were lost, but rather that the foundation of God stands sure, having this seal, the Lord knoweth them that are His. It didn't matter that their faith had been overthrown. What mattered is that the Lord loved them, had chosen them, made them His own. That's what mattered. It's not belief, it's not faith, it's not obedience. Paul says in Hebrews that by the obedience of one shall many be made righteous. Dear friends, where's my obedience in that? Where's your obedience in that? It says by the obedience of one. That one was Jesus Christ and His perfect obedience unto the Father. And so when you look here and you see how Naaman came out with a belief and a faith in God and obedience towards God that has nothing to do with his home in heaven, but rather our obedience has blessings for us here, can bring about temporal blessings here. In fact, Isaiah says in chapter 1 and verse 19, if ye be willing and obedient, ye shall eat the good of the land. Well, that land is Canaan's land. And Canaan, as we've talked about before, is a picture of the church, not a picture of heaven. He's saying if you're willing and obedient, you'll eat the good of the land. That is, you'll have some blessings here and now. Christ said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and you'll go to heaven. No, He said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and all these things, that is temporal things, will be added unto you. Where's heaven in that? Heaven's not mentioned. He's saying by your obedience, you're going to be blessed here and now. You say, Brother Nathan, you just don't understand. Christ did His part. He had His obedient part in it. And now we must have our obedient part in it as well. And the two work hand in hand. Well, again, Paul says that by the obedience of one shall many be made righteous. We find other places in Scripture, John chapter 1, where we're told that we were born not by the will of the flesh. And Paul says that it's not by works of righteousness which we have done, and that we're saved and called not according to our works. Well, wouldn't obedience be a work? Wouldn't obedience be a work of righteousness? Paul says it's not by those things. It's not of him that willeth, nor of him that runneth, but of God that showeth mercy. And so, again, I use that just in a way of introduction this morning to say that this is not a lesson for eternal blessings, but rather temporal blessings. But notice here in verse 2, there was a little maid. And this little maid was a maid of compassion. She was a woman of compassion. She was one that had been taken from her homeland, and rather than being scornful, rather than being one that just had a bad attitude towards her captives, which I think I would probably have. You know, if somebody came and took me from my homeland, you think I'm going to help them? Well, this little maid, she's an example for us all. She's a woman of compassion, even to our captives. And she's saying that, would to God that my master, that is Naaman, go down to Samaria and meet with the man of God, Elisha, because Elisha can cure him of his leprosy. Do you see the compassion in that, that she has towards Naaman? She's not really caring the fact that he took her from her homeland, but rather she's just doing the right thing towards this man. Not only that, but she's a woman of faith. Not only compassion, but faith. You say, Brother Nathan, why do you say she's a woman of faith? Well, because this little maid, she had never seen and she had never heard of Elisha curing a leper. In fact, I don't believe she had ever seen or ever heard of any leper ever being cured. If you find the writings in the Gospel of Luke chapter 4, I believe it's about verse 27, you'll see there where Christ says that there were many lepers in the day of Elisha, but there was only one cured, and that was Naaman. So we have all these lepers, but there's only one that was ever cured, and that's the guy that she's telling to go down and get cured. So she's never seen and she's never heard of a leper being cleansed. But the faith of this woman just baffles my mind. Oh, that I would have the faith of this woman, the trust in my God, to say, I know my God can do exceedingly great things. I know my God can do all things, and I'm going to put my faith and trust in Him. I wish I had that same attitude. You know, I can look at the New Testament and the Old Testament for that matter, and I can see wonderful promises of the Lord. I can see wonderful examples of how He's done great and marvelous things in the past. And you know what? Even seeing this and hearing about these things, my faith is not as strong as it should be. But here's one that hasn't seen. Here's one that hasn't heard. And oh, the faith that she has, that there's a man of God who can cure him of his leprosy. And so this little maid, she says a mouthful. For being a little maid, probably about 8, 9 years old, many will speculate. For being one here whose name is not even given, she certainly says a mouthful, doesn't she? She's one whose faith had a huge impact on the life of Naaman, whose faith has a huge impact on us today. If she had kept silent, if she had not been a woman of compassion and a woman of faith, we wouldn't have this lesson here, I don't believe. But because she was that woman, oh, the impact that she had on his life and our lives. I tell you, dear friends, never consider yourself inconsequential. Never underestimate the level of impact your faith can have on the life of somebody else. Never underestimate that. Never go about your life saying, I'm just a no-name person, or I'm just a no-name people. I'm telling you what, dear friends, we belong to somebody greater. We belong to somebody more significant. And so when you think about your life and you say, well, I'm just some no-name people, I'm just some inconsequential person, get rid of that thought and go about your life remembering that you're a child of the Most High King. And go about remembering that your faith can have a huge impact on the lives of others. This little maid, even a child's faith, this little maid can have and did have a huge impact. And so Naaman then goes before the king and he says, here's what I've heard. I've heard that I can go down here to Israel. There's a man of God and he can cure me of this leprosy. And so the king of Syria says, okay, I think that's a great plan. I like you. You're second in command. You're a man of valor. You've been extraordinarily blessed under my reign. I'm going to grant you this request. You go down there to Israel and you seek the man that can cure you. And so he writes a letter unto the king and he takes gifts. And he's taking gifts somewhat mistakenly, if you will. He's thinking that he's going to have to pay a great price for this blessing of the Lord. Well, I think I mentioned this with the manna, but I'll mention it again today. The mercy of the Lord cannot be bought. The compassion and the grace of the Lord cannot be bought. Naaman thinks that it's something he's going to have to pay a great price for, but there's no amount that can be paid because no amount is great enough. And so he's taking these gifts by mistake, if you will. And the king then gets the letter, the king of Israel I'm talking about, he gets the letter that is sent to him, and I think he probably, in one aspect, regards it as blasphemy, because the king recognizes that nobody can cure leprosy. This is just an incurable disease. And it's somewhat blasphemous then to ask this king to do that. He's saying, am I God that I can do such a task? And so he's renting his clothes in distress, if you will, and out of perhaps frustration of this blasphemous letter. But he's fretting also because he's thinking, okay, I've been asked to do this thing by an enemy of mine, and I'm not able to do it, and now my enemy's going to hold it against me. He's seeking a quarrel with me. He's asked me to do the impossible. I can't do the impossible, and now my enemy's going to have war against me because of my failure. So he's very upset. He's renting his clothes. He's very frustrated with that. But then Elisha, the man of God, comes on the scene, and he reminds him of the great blessings of the Lord and how the Lord has given unto the nation of Israel his prophets. He's reminding him, I think, and saying, why are you worrying? Why are you fretting? Have you forgotten how wonderfully the Lord has blessed us as his people in the past? And he says, send him down to me because I want him to know that there's a prophet in Israel. I got to thinking about that and I thought, you know, in Israel, we have a spiritual Israel today. We have the Israel in the Old Testament, and we have the type, if you will, or the fulfillment of a spiritual Israel today in the New Testament church. And I got to thinking to myself, I want a prophet in Israel. I don't want a king. This king couldn't do anything. But Elisha says, send him to me so that he'll know there's a prophet in Israel. A lot of people want a king in Israel. A lot of people want somebody that's popular. A lot of people want somebody that can be a great leader. A lot of people want a great king that they can follow after, if you will. One that's well known and powerful and a great leader. But that's not what I want. I want a prophet in Israel. I want somebody that is a man of God, a man of God's own choosing, one that can comfort the hearts of the Lord's people, but not only comfort them and cry unto them that their warfare is accomplished, but also one that can cry aloud unto them, show them their sins and their transgressions, show unto them the way of the Lord that they might follow more perfectly in His will. That's what I want. I want a prophet in Israel. We don't have prophets in the strict sense today, but we believe that preachers are a sense of prophets, if you will, because they preach from the prophets of old. That's what I want. I want a prophet. I don't want a king. So Elisha says, send him to me, that he'll know that there's a prophet in Israel. Now the Lord, through Elisha here, is showing how him, that is the Lord is showing him through Elisha how he chooses to bless. And the Lord chooses to bless those that are humble in their person. The Lord does not choose to bless those that have a spirit of pride. And we can't assume, and we're made to expect, that how can one have pride and yet be obedient to God? Because pride is at the heart of all rebellion. Pride is saying, I know what you've said, God. I know how you want things to go, but I think I know better. I think I know better. And so we're going to go with my path over here. That's what pride is. Pride is at the heart of all rebellion. And so Naaman here has a little issue with pride. And of course, we can look to the pages of the Bible and we can see great admonitions for the people of God that they would not be prideful in their lives. We can look to the book of Proverbs and see that pride goeth before destruction and pride will bring a man low. But we also find six things doth the Lord hate, and yea, seven are an abomination unto him. That first abomination is a proudful look. The Lord hates pride. And so Naaman here is needing to be humbled. He's struggling with pride. And he's going to be humbled in several ways. First of all, he's humbled because the king couldn't help him. He rode about 100 miles to get to this king of Israel, and the king of Israel has no help for him. So you know what that means to Naaman? He's now got to ride 30 miles further. And transportation then wasn't like it is today. It wasn't like hopping in the car and going to Muncie and being there in a half hour. But rather, it took you days and days to get to where you're going. And so you can see how this would kind of grate on the pride of a man. Here I've traveled all this way, and you're telling me I'm not quite there yet. I got to go another 30 miles when I was told that you could help me. That would certainly great on the pride of Naaman. But then, more so than that, we find that Naaman comes to the house of Elisha. He finally gets there, and Elisha does not come out and meet him. If you were looking as we were reading through it, you'll remember that Elisha sent a messenger to greet Naaman. So here's Naaman. He's traveled all this way. He's brought all of these men with him. He's brought all of these extravagant gifts with him that he might dote on Elisha, if you will. And yet Elisha doesn't even come out to meet him. He just stays in the house and sends a messenger and says, just go down here to the River Jordan, dunk yourself 7 times, and you'll be clean. You see how that would humble Naaman. You see how that would grate on his pride that I'm not even important enough for this man Elisha to come out and meet me person to person. But so he's humbled in that regard. But he's humbled too, I believe, because Elisha shuts down Naaman's plan. Elisha says through his messenger, go down to the River Jordan and dunk yourself 7 times. And Naaman is not happy, and he says, well, that's not how it's supposed to happen. He's supposed to come out and meet me. He's supposed to call upon the name of his God, and he's supposed to touch the leprosy in my skin, and then it's going to be cured. That's how it's supposed to go. But Elisha shut down that plan. He had a whole different plan, didn't he? Dear friends, that makes me ask the question, how many of us try to fit our plans into the blessings of the Lord? How many of us want to go to the Lord and say, I've come up with a great plan, God. I've come up with a real doozy. I've been thinking about it for a long time. And now if you'll just do this, this, and this, we'll all be fine. That's a wonderful plan. How many of us do that? We try to fit our plans into the temporal blessings of the Lord. How many try to fit our plans into the eternal salvation of the Lord's people? You ever gotten these tracks, these little flyers, God's plan for salvation? And boy, they've come up with some doozies. They've got some good plans in there. Unfortunately, it's not God's plan. You want to read God's plan? Go over to Romans chapter 8 and verse 29. Moreover, whom he did foreknow, then we also did predestinate to be conformed to the image of his son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. And then we did predestinate, then we also called, and then we called, he also justified. And then we justified, he also glorified. That's God's plan for salvation. 2 verses, you'll find it in Romans chapter 8. But so many want to go about establishing their own plans and putting God's stamp of approval on it. Well, so we find Naaman here is being humbled because his plan is being shut down. But I believe Naaman thought too, perhaps, that Elisha's plan was stupid. I think that's just a stupid plan. You got to be kidding me. That I've traveled all this way and I got to go put myself in this nasty river, Jordan. In Damascus, we have better rivers. And by the way, they are better. They're clear waters. They're cold waters that flow from the mountains. They have better rivers there. And so Naaman in his thinking is probably saying, well, why am I going to have to go over here and put myself in this nasty river? That's just stupid, Elisha. Not only that, but it assumes that I haven't been in these rivers at home. I've bathed in these rivers back home, these better rivers. I've been in them. And believe me, it doesn't work. What's so special about this river? You see, he thinks there's power in the water instead of power in the Lord. And so he's thinking that this plan that Elisha has just come up with is just too simple of a plan. That I just go down here and dip myself 7 times and that be the end of it. What's so hard about following the Lord? A lot of people want to complicate it. If it's not complicated, then you must not be following the Lord. No, that's not the way it is. There's nothing hard about following the Lord. Thus saith the Lord. And where thus saith begins and where thus saith ends, so should our actions begin and end. There's nothing hard in following the Lord. And so he thinks, well, this is just crazy that it would just be this simple and that I have to go to this river which is far superior to the rivers back home. So he's being humbled by all of this. And the servants come and reason with him. They say, well, if he had come out and he had told you that you've got to do this grand plan, you would have been happy to do it. But now that it's such a simple plan, you think it's stupid and that it's not going to work and you're upset. And so his servants begin to reason with him. And of course, I'm thankful to the Lord that I have people in my life that can reason with me from time to time. I think we all have good friends and family in our lives that can reason with us from time to time and make us understand some things. And so Naaman here was very blessed to have these servants. So he goes down then to the River Jordan and he dunks himself 7 times in the river, just as he was told to do. I think doing it 7 times, it shows a completeness. The number 7 usually represents completeness or wholeness in the Bible. And that is showing that Naaman had a spirit of willingness to follow the Lord wholly in his life, to do exactly what he's been told to do. But so many times, I look at my life and I say, well, I've dunked myself 4 times, I've dunked myself 5 times or 6 times, that ought to be good enough. A lot of times I want to skip out on the 7th time. But I believe he was just as much of a leper on the 6th time as he was on the 1st time. It wasn't until the 7th time that he was completely cured of his leprosy. The blessings of the Lord come from complete obedience, dear friends. And who are we to say, well, we can skip by on that last time? No, if the Lord says 7 times... then it's 7 times. And so Naaman does this, and as we know, he comes up out of the water, and his flesh is that of a little child, and he was clean. And he returns to the man of God. And he returns to him, and I think this is showing him that he's not only convinced in the power of God, but it's also showing an attitude that he was grateful and thankful for the blessing that he had just had. But also, I think it's showing that he's been now converted to following after the God of Israel. And so he comes back to him and he says, I've got all these things for you. I want to give all these things to you for helping me. Just take a little bit. And Elisha, in verse 16, he makes a very interesting statement. He said, as the Lord liveth, before whom I stand. Who are you standing before today? I hope we're all cognizant of the fact that we're standing before the Lord. Elisha was. He says, the Lord liveth, and before whom I stand, I will receive none. And he urged him to take it, that is, Naaman was pressing him to do it, but he refused. You see, Elisha, he didn't want Naaman to be mistaken. He didn't want Naaman thinking that there was any power in his gifts. He didn't want him to think that there was any usefulness in his gifts. He didn't want him having to go back to the king of Syria and make an account of the things that he had left behind as far as his treasures and raiments and say, well, I came up out of the water cleaned and I only had to leave behind 3,000 pieces of gold or something like that. Elisha wanted all of the glory to go to God. And he wanted it to be very clear that God and God alone is responsible for what happened here. And we find that in other places too. You might remember when Daniel came before the king to read the writing on the wall, and the king was going to give him great treasures. And Daniel says, I don't want it. I'm going to read the writing on the wall, but I don't want your treasures. And we find too when Simon actually came unto Peter and said that he wanted the gift of the apostleship and he was willing to pay for it. What did Peter say? He said, you and your money perish. Your money's no good here. This is something that only the Lord can give. And so Elisha is being very clear here that he wants Naaman and all those that Naaman might tell to understand that God and God only should receive the glory. And so Naaman then, he says, well, okay, I know you won't take anything, but can I have a little bit of dirt to take home with me? That's very peculiar. Why in this world would he want to take some dirt home with him? Well, I think he probably wanted it for one of two reasons. The first reason is that the men and women of Syria and of those heathen nations, their gods were territorial gods. They thought, well, if you left this ground over here where there was one god, and you went to this ground over here where there's another god, you know, this god back here on this ground has no power, no ability. Now you're on this god's territory, if you will. They believed in territorial gods. And so Naaman is probably thinking, perhaps, well, this god's just cured me of my leprosy. I want to take this god home with me. You see, he's not quite fully understand that there's only one god. There's only one true and living god in all the earth. And he thinks mistakenly that this god is found in the earth of this land. And I'm thankful today that as Naaman wanted to carry his god, I'm thankful that our God carries us. Can I say that this morning? Naaman thought, I need to load up this God and carry him with me. It's not the way it works. Our God carries us, dear friends. And so I think that's perhaps one reason why he wanted to take the dirt home. But perhaps the other reason might be that he wanted to build an altar unto this God of Israel. I don't know what the case is. You can go home and study upon that. But he goes ahead and he asks forgiveness for all the idolatry that he's been involved in, all the heathen worship that he's been involved in. He wants forgiveness for that. And of course, Elisha says, go in peace. I think that's telling him, you've been forgiven. You've been forgiven of your sins. Go in peace now. Gehazi now comes onto the scene, the servant of Elisha. And as we read, Gehazi wants a little bit of gain for himself. He thinks to himself, I can't believe that Elisha didn't take any of this. All this gold, all of these treasures, all of these raiments, I can't believe he didn't take a little bit. I'm going to take some. It's only right that I take some. So Gehazi has now this scheme that he's going to run after Naaman. And he's lying to himself, no doubt. He's no doubt telling himself, this is for the greater good. This is for good that I'm going to run after him and get some of this money. He lies not only to himself, but he lies to Naaman. And he says that my master has sent me. Well, Elisha didn't send him, but he lies to Naaman and he says, my master has sent me and he wants me to get money and raiments for these two young prophets that are coming from Mount Ephraim. So he does that and Naaman actually gives him more than he asked for. He asked for only, I think, one talent of silver, but he gives him two talents instead. And then on top of that, he gives him his own servants to carry the stuff back for him. Boy, this worked out really well. I got more than I wanted. I even got somebody to carry it back for me. But Gehazi, then as he's walking back to his home, he's perhaps got some boldness in his sin. His boldness comes about when he's thinking to himself, well, I'm going to hide what's just happened. I'm going to stop at the tower. That's at a middle point, if you will, between where he was and where he was going. I'm going to go ahead and stop here, and I'm going to take what these two servants of Naaman are carrying, and I'm going to kind of hide them, and then I'm going to go the rest of the way, and Elisha won't know anything about it. So he was kind of scheming, thinking that he was going to hide something. But he goes before Elisha, and Elisha says, "Where have you been?" And he lies to Elisha, and he says, "I haven't been anywhere." Well, Elisha's a man of God. He's a prophet of God. He's been given discernment from God. And he knows that this is a lie. Can you see the boldness of Gehazi here, thinking that he can lie to a man of God, a prophet of God? He's using his position and his ministry for gain. That's unfortunately seen too many times in today's world, that ministries are used for earthly gain. But he has this great boldness in lying to Elisha. And it comes to a very sad end, as I mentioned already this morning, that Gehazi then is given the leprosy of Naaman. Not just any leprosy, but his leprosy is going to be as white as snow. That's the worst of the leprosy. That is the most progression that leprosy can take, if you will, is that it then would become, his skin would become as white as snow. And so I take from that, that sin has consequences. Sin has very real consequences. We're not to be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever man soweth, that shall he also reap. If we live after the sins of the flesh, if we think, well, it's just a little something on the surface, doesn't really matter, I'm just going to go in this path, we're going to find out that sin has great consequences. And that was the case here with Gehazi. Very sad ending. There was going to be no cure for him. There was going to be no cure for his family. He says that unto him and unto thy seed forever, there was going to be no hope for him. And so we take from that again the lesson that sin has consequences for God's people here in this life. I think there are many wonderful lessons here with the story of Naaman. I would encourage you to go home and read upon it and see how the obedience in the life of a child of God can bring about wonderful blessings for them. Go home, study upon it, see if you can find some other lessons as well. Let's stand and sing a hymn this morning.